Hey, you guys, time for another Tomes of Terror book review. We got a good one for you today. Oh man, this one was like so awesome. I had so much fun with this one. This one is The Amulet by Michael McDowell. Now, those of you that have been watching my videos in this series will know that I believe this is the third Michael McDowell book that I covered, the third one that I've read, actually. The first one I did was The Elementals, which is kind of like his best known one. And then I also did Cold Moon Over Babylon. Now, Michael McDowell, if you guys don't know, or if you didn't see the other videos, he was kind of like probably best known nowadays for writing the original screenplay for Beetlejuice and The Nightmare Before Christmas. But he was also like a really popular author of paperback horror originals in the 70s and 80s. And was kind of he was recommended by Stephen King. Like Stephen King even like talked about him in Dance Macabre, and in the book that I have by Grady Hendrix, Paperbacks from Hell, he talks a lot about Michael McDowell, how a lot of his stuff was really popular during the 80s. But unfortunately, most of it went out of print. I think like you know a lot of those there was such a big paperback boom in horror in the 80s, and there was just and a lot of the books, to be fair, were not really that great. So a lot of them went out of print, including his, unfortunately. But for whatever reason, I guess because, you know, he had like other writers that were always like pulling for him and stuff like that, Valancourt Books decided to reprint all of his stuff from back in the 80s with new covers, new introductions, stuff like that. So this one actually has a new introduction written in 2013 by Poppy Z. Bright. So that's when this was republished in 2013. This was originally published in 1979. And like I said, this was his first published novel. And it's actually, although the story is actually set in 1965. Now, this one, like I said, this, you know, I've read two of his other ones, Cold Moon Over Babylon, which this is kind of more in line with that, or and The Elementals, which is kind of almost like a weird, like creepy haunted house type story. Not really, but it's like a really original kind of thing. This one is just pretty much straight up gory bloodbath fun. You know what I mean? This one is just a fucking blast. It is so fun. And it's just kind of like, I mean, like from the beginning of it, I was kind of, because I kind of feel like I read some other reviews of this, and one of the main, there weren't a lot of complaints because most of the reviews were really good. One of the complaints that some people had was that it started out a little slow because Michael McDowell kind of like was laying the groundwork of like this little town where it was taking place and kind of going into the ins and outs of who everybody was and stuff like that. I don't know. I didn't find that slow. I thought it was like really interesting, but you know, it's your mileage is going to vary. You know, maybe if you're not into that kind of like scene setting, then maybe the beginning might be slow, but it did not seem that slow to me at all. In fact, this was like a really quick read. I read this in like probably just like a few hours, just because I couldn't. I kept like going back to it because I couldn't put it down, because it's just I wanted to see like how much more batshit insane it could get. So Michael McDowell, he passed away in 1999, unfortunately, in the AIDS epidemic. And so it's really nice that Valancourt Books, and I said this on my other Michael McDowell novel reviews as well, that that they decided to kind of, you know, bring his stuff back from the dead, because it really is several notches above a lot of the just kind of like pulpy paperback horror that came out in the 80s. I mean, it's just so well written, and he's just really good at drawing characters that really kind of come to life, and he's really good at like establishing a sense of place. So Michael McDowell was actually born in Alabama. I think he wasn't born too far away from like the, you know, the Alabama Florida state line. So a lot of his stories are very southern, like usually very southern gothic, and he really likes to do these kind of like twisting family relationships, or like, you know, twisted relationships between all the townsfolk and stuff like that. So that's kind of and he's really good at conveying like what what like rural southern people are like and what towns like that are like, because that's kind of how he grew up. So, you know, it's not surprising that he's really good at being able to convey that. And a lot of his stuff, including this one, has a lot of very dark humor. I will say, if you are squeamish, if you do not want to read a book in which men, women, children, babies, pretty much everybody dies in just horrifically, ridiculously gruesome ways, then this is not the book for you, because holy shit, this book is a bloodbath. It's just kind of, it every but like so many people get killed, like the body count is enormous, and everybody gets killed like in a different way, like and the kills get more and more creative. I've seen this more than one person, like when I was reading reviews of it, more than one person wondered if this novel was actually the inspiration for the Final Destination movies, just because the way that like people die in this is just like so, it's so Rube Goldbergian. It's just like so fucking funny, but it is, this is very, very gruesome. And like I said, don't get too attached to any of the characters because pretty much all of them are gonna get killed in like really, really graphic ways. But it's, and I know that's terrible, but it's like if you're into that kind of stuff, like if you're into like slasher movies, but with kind of like an old Southern Gothic feel to it and like a lot of dark humor, then you will probably love this because I just thought this book was so fucking fun. So, what the premise of this book is, it's set in this little bitty town called Pinecone, Alabama, and it's set in 1965. So at the beginning, we have this young guy who's from there named Dean Howell. He's going to be shipped off to Vietnam. So he's at like, you know, the training, you know, the base or whatever. And it so happens that during a training exercise, the rifle that he's using essentially explodes and blows most of his face off. So that's kind of like happens in the first few pages. And from that point forward, he's pretty much a vegetable because it, you know, it fucked up his face, like he's all deformed, and it fucked up his part of his brain too, I'm imagining. Now, interestingly, the rifles were made in Pinecone because Pinecone, that's like their main that's their main source of revenue, is this munitions factory that was put there, and pretty much everyone in the town either works there or knows somebody that works there. And one of the people that works there is Dean's young wife, Sarah, who's 21 years old, and they haven't really been married all that long. So after that happens, so after he gets his face blown off, and obviously he's, like I said, essentially a vegetable now. So they send him back to Pinecone, and Sarah Howell, his wife, now has to take care of him. And not only that, but they had to move back in with Dean's mother, Jo, who is the worst person ever. She is just kind of like this big, fat, mean, selfish, horrible woman who will not like lift a finger to do anything around the house because her whole thing is that, well, Sarah and Dean are living there rent-free, and so Sarah should just do everything around the house, even though it's Joe's house, even though Sarah has like a full-time job. She works at the munitions factory and she works there 40 hours a week. So Joe is there all day and basically just sits around on her ass and watches TV. And then so Sarah comes over from work and still has to make everybody dinner, make everybody breakfast, make everybody lunch. She has to like do everything for everybody. And she's getting a little, you know, sick of it. And Joe is just kind of like this horrible, like passive aggressive. She's always making just sly little comments about Sarah. She's not doing enough. She's not good enough. She's not this and that. She's always like blaming her for everything. So after the accident, when they send Dean back to the house, and basically all he can do, he's just like wrapped in bandages and he just kind of lays around. And Sarah is not even entirely sure if he's still like in there, you know what I mean? In the sense that because he can't talk, she's not really sure if he can hear them. So he's just basically like sitting around like a mummy all the time, and she just has to feed him. And, you know, and she gets to a point where it's just like, is this gonna be like the rest of my life? Like having to feed him through the bandages. He can't do anything. He just lays there. And then his fat ass mom is just like sitting around on her ass, you know, not doing anything around the house. Like she won't even wash a dish or anything like that. And just kind of like, you know, sitting and then just kind of excoriating Sarah for not doing enough for Dean. That's your husband. You should do this, that, and the other thing. So it's not a great situation. The only kind of bright spot in Sarah's life is that she has a friend named Becca who lives next door, and they also work next to each other, like on the assembly line at the munitions factory. So after Dean has the accident, Joe pretty much blames everybody in the town for what happened to him. She's like, basically, if the guy that managed the munitions factory had gave him a job at the factory, then he would never have got sent off to Vietnam. So he would have never even been at the camp to start with, or at the base to start with, and this wouldn't have happened. He also, Joe also blames Sarah for essentially like making the guns that did that, even though she wasn't even working there, like when that gun was made. But it's like I said, Joe pretty much blames everybody. And she's kind of like, the way she is, she's one of those people that's like, oh, I'd do anything for my only son and everything, and I'm gonna get everybody. So she just blames the whole entire town for what happened to her son. So the first person she blames that she targets is this dude named Larry, who's like the manager. And like I said, he didn't give Dean a job at the factory. There was a good reason, but I can't remember what it was. But he did, I think he got, or Dean got drafted like before there was an opening at the factory. I think that's what it was. So Larry was like, I totally would have given him a job, but then he got drafted and there wasn't an opening for him or anything like that. But as soon as an opening came up, he actually gave the job to Sarah instead as kind of like a consolation prize or whatever. So they would, have some more money. So this guy, even though he's a good guy, Joe, for that reason, because she blames everybody, she's like, well, it's his fault. If he had, if Dean had been working at the factory, none of this would have happened. So one day, when Larry comes over to see Dean, she gives Larry this amulet. And it looks very much like the one you see right here on the cover. It's kind of like, it's black and with like a gold thing in the middle, and then it has like a black, kind of a black stone in the middle of it. It's kind of like modern looking, and it's on like a gold chain. So Sarah thinks all of this is very weird because Joe never particularly liked Larry, or his wife and five children, never really gave a shit about them before. It's like, so why is she all of a sudden giving him a present, like to give to his wife? It's like, it just doesn't make any sense to her. But she's kind of like, okay, whatever. And Larry thinks it's very weird too. He's just kind of like, okay, thanks. And another thing too is that Sarah has never seen that amulet before. She doesn't know where it came from. And so that also kind of makes her a little bit suspicious. Now, after like pretty much the same day that Larry gets the amulet and gives it to his wife, Rachel, the amulet has a really weird property where it kind of like you can't ever find the catch, like how the chain opens, but somehow it always just kind of like pulls apart, and then it kind of like almost sort of puts itself onto your neck, like without you really realizing, you know what I mean? And then kind of like locks back on. So that's what ends up happening. Now, interestingly, this isn't really a spoiler, like I said, although this probably will have like some spoilers in it. If you just want to go into this blind without knowing what's happening, then maybe you might want to like click off now. But it's like I said, it's not a real like complicated story. It's basically just, once the amulet gets into like one family's hands, it's basically just like one big long chain of events and like just escalating mayhem like throughout this town as this amulet goes, because the amulet is essentially cursed is what it is. So and it just kind of, so the book kind of follows the amulet like throughout the town, and the increasingly horrible things that happen to everybody that gets it. So it's that kind of thing. So basically the same day that Larry and his wife get the amulet, Rachel, like, she does some fucked up shit. Like, she burns their house down. Like, she drugs the kids and she drugs her husband so they can't leave, they can't get up, and then she burns the house down. So all of them, like the couple and their five kids, all burn up, and their house just like fucking burns to the ground. Now, everyone in town is horrified, of course, because this is an entire family that was, quite well liked, and they all get wiped out in this big, huge fire, but nobody really thinks anything about it at first. Now, like I said, this book, it's kind of like a series of events. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like stuff keeps escalating, but we do have a main protagonist in Sarah Howell, who, even though stuff kind of goes back and forth, because how the structure of the book is basically like, the amulet will be somewhere, and then who, like, something really, really bad will happen. Like, people will, one person will die, two people will die, a whole family will die, or whatever. And then the amulet will somehow get into the hands of someone else. Like, it'll pass to someone else, and then something will happen to them. So there's kind of like each chapter is sort of like setting up the people that got the amulet, kind of like giving a little bit of like a character thing, which, like I said, this is why Michael McDowell is really good at very efficiently describing these characters and making you care about them, like right before, like in a few pages, and then a couple pages later he just like dispatches them in just horrible, grotesque ways. So it's almost kind of like, I like this book a lot because just like the tone of it was so gleeful. You could tell that he was having like such a good time being like, look at these nice people, and like having them interact with each other, and then he's like, bam, and then he's like just like, what's the most horrific way I could kill these people? And like, and I could just like picture him like laughing maniacally. So it just seems like, so basically nobody in this is safe. I don't care if you like that character, I don't care if it's a nice person, I don't care if it's a bad person, I don't care if it's a baby, no one gets spared. Like if this amulet like falls into someone's hands, some bad shit is gonna happen, and there's like nothing you can do about it. So it's kind of like, so it kind of gets to a point where, you know, you're introduced to a new family or a new person or whatever, and you're like, oh, this is a cool person, and it's like, shame what's gonna happen to them. But then it's this, like I said, it's kind of like a slasher movie in the sense that yes, you like the characters, but you're just waiting to see, you're waiting for the shoe to drop, you're waiting to see what horrible thing is gonna happen to these people. And so the whole book is kind of like that. But you also have Sarah Howell, like I said, who's a young woman, and she is kind of like the main protagonist, like the center of the action, because she, since she lives with Joe and she knows that Joe, her mother-in-law, is like such a horrible garbage person, then she's pretty sure that Joe knew what that amulet was going to do and that it's cursed. And so she kind of makes it her mission, because obviously she can't really tell anybody because they wouldn't believe her, because, you know, what, you know, that would be dumb, as you go to the cops and be like, yeah, there's this amulet and it's cursed, and whenever it falls into somebody's hands and they put it on, what usually ends up happening is that when you put it on, it's almost like it makes you murderous. You know what I mean? So someone will put it on and then they'll be like, man, my husband sucks. And then they like just stick a like a ice pick in their brain or whatever, and, you know, then burn the house down or, you know, whatever it is. So it'll do that. But then the person that murdered the, you know, the one that with the amulet on, will kill themselves accidentally. You know what I mean? Like, for example, there's one scene where these two girls, and it's one girl, they're friends, but one of them is like has a beauty parlor and she's working on the other girl's hair because she has a date that night. And so she has the amulet on because she got it through this like really complicated series of events. And then so she decides, she's, you know, as soon as they put it on, like you can kind of, he writes about their thoughts. And it's all of a sudden they start feeling like really uncharitable toward this person. Like, it's like, what the fuck? Why won't she shut up? Why won't she do this and that and the other? And they get really like cranky. And so the girl like takes some chemicals or something like that from her beauty parlor and basically like puts it on the girl's scalp and just starts pulling all her hair out, and her scalp starts dissolving and all this other kind of shit. So it's like she kills her friend, but then like when she's going up to get something like off a shelf or whatever, she falls and like the ceiling fan decapitates her. So it's that kind of thing. So whenever the murderer, you know, they murder a person like in a really horrible way, but then they die themselves accidentally, like in a crazy, you know, it's like there's one where, you know, a girl like kills a baby by like putting it in the washing machine. That was a pretty fucked up scene. And then she falls, like she slips and falls in the suds, and I think she falls like on some broken glass or something from earlier, but then like she puts her hand on the cord of the washing machine and like electrocutes herself. So it's all this other kind of stuff. Like I said, it's nothing that, it's very, very Final Destination, but because it's played with such humor, I think one of the things that I loved about this, and this is very, because I grew up in the South too, and this is very true to life. Like I said, this is set in 1965, and it does have some stuff like that. Like there is some kind of like, there's still, you know, it's Alabama, so there's still like racial segregation, and that's kind of like a big thing, like a big background thing in the story. And like I said, Vietnam is going on and stuff like that. Other than that, it's not real. It doesn't seem dated. It doesn't seem like, you know, it doesn't seem like nostalgic or anything like that. Cause like I said, it's just this gleeful like gore fest. And there are some things about it that are, that, you know, point to it being 1965, but it's not, it doesn't like smack you in the face with it or anything. So, you know, so don't go into it like thinking it's, oh, it's this big nostalgia. It's not really like that. But what, I mean, one of my favorite things about it is just kind of like this tone of, you know, obviously everybody in this town, this is a very small town, there's only like a few thousand people, and everyone kind of like knows each other. And so when somebody gets killed, like everybody hears about it and everybody's like freaking out about it, but they're also like kind of ghoulish because they're always, you know, they'll have like, you know, some horrible thing will happen, and then immediately like everyone will come up with like all this gossip and stuff, and they'll just like make up stuff to make the shit even crazier than it was. And the funny thing too is that a lot of the people, like, even when they find the bodies, like, you know what I mean, and like I said, some of these people die in like ridiculously horrible ways, even when they find the bodies, most people are really just kind of like, they're not like overly hysterical, they'll just be kind of like, well, that kind of thing will happen, you know what I mean? And it's like that kind of thing. It's hard for me to explain, but I don't know. I really, really found that very, very funny, but also like realistic. It's funny, but it also kind of like resonated with me, like rang true with me, because that is what a lot of like rural Southerners are like. So, I mean, he had a really good ear for this kind of rural Southern culture, like the way they talk. You know, he's very, very good at capturing that cadence of their speech and the different kind of like phrases that they use and stuff like that. So it is a really very, I mean, it's not a long novel. I think it's like under 300 pages, but it's very, very, and there's a lot of characters, but all of them are very, very vividly drawn and in a very brief time, which I think is really great. I think the only, I mean, I didn't mind this at all. I think that some people did be like, well, you know, it does get kind of repetitive after, or you know what's going to happen, obviously, because as soon as somebody new gets the amulet and they, you know, we are establishing how they got it and like, you know, what's going to happen then, you know what's going to happen. But that really did not diminish my enjoyment of it at all. I mean, like I said, this is basically like a really, really great, super, super gory, fucked up slasher movie that you just kind of like sit and watch popcorn and be like, oh my God, are they really going to put that baby in the washing machine? Yep, there it goes, right? The baby in the washing machine. You know what I mean? So it's just kind of like that. Like I said, it's not going to be for everybody, obviously, but if you're into this kind of like black humor, super, super over the top, like I said, if you like the Final Destination movies, you will probably fucking love this, because I can totally see how whoever wrote the Final Destination movies, I've only seen like the first one or two, whoever wrote the Final Destination movies maybe read this and were like, yeah, that sounds like a cool idea, because the structure of it is very, very similar. But like I said, I really, really liked, and I really liked the whole Southern vibe to it, the Southern patois, like all of the phrases that they use and stuff like that, because I was like, oh my God, that's what she said, that just sounded like something my grandma would say and something like that. So it's like, I don't know, I just really, in case you can't tell, I just had so, so much fun with this book. It is just so entertaining. It was so entertaining. I didn't actually mean for this to happen, but honestly, it was kind of a nice, I don't want to say palate cleanser, but, you know, since last week I reviewed House of Leaves, which is a very complex, complicated puzzle type of thing that you really have to, like, pay attention to. So it was kind of neat. And like I said, I didn't know this going into it, but it was kind of neat that, like, you know, the week after it, I just got this fun, breezy, crazy, gruesome, it you know, like I said, it's just a blast, it's just a ride. And honestly, I think I might like this one. I mean, The Elementals is amazing. I need to read some of his other stuff too, like everybody says like the Blackwater Saga is really good, so that might be, I mean, that's longer, but I might get into that too. But I think, and I loved Cold Moon Over Babylon, but I think I might have liked this one a little bit better, even though this is his first book. It is very, or his first published novel, I guess, but it's very, very self-assured. Like I said, it's just, it's so great. It's just such a fun roller coaster ride that you can just kind of like sit back and be like, all right, so what kind of fucked up shit is gonna happen now? Like I said, if you do not want to see like, you know, dozens and dozens of people, including babies, children, all like die in just horrible ways, then maybe not so much. Then maybe this is not for you, because yeah, because like I said, nobody is safe in this. But if you're into like over the top slasher movies, then you will probably really, really dig this. I mean, I just thought this was amazingly fun and wonderful. So, you know, check it out if you would like to. And let me know what you thought about it if you've read it. And that will do it for this Tomes of Terror. I'll see you guys on the next one. Bye.